Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Maharaj, who as a young boy but was inspired by the Lord to speak eloquently, describe how the realization of impersonal Brahman is much deficient in comparison to the glory of the personality of Godhead. We're on Anucheta 85, short. Parama siddhi rupad brahmani layad abhita bhajanasya gariyastvena tasyaiva gariyastvam upadishati. It is instructed on the grounds that worship of him is greater than even merging into Brahman, which is supposed to be. Merging into Brahman is supposed to be the supreme perfection. So that proves that he is greater than Brahman, because worshipping him is greater than merging into Brahman. That's stated, Animita Bhagavati Bhaktik Siddhir Gariyasi, statement of Kapiladeva. Unmotivated devotion for the personality of Godhead is superior to impersonal perfection. Siddhir Muktirapi Iti Ti Ka Cha. Sridhar Swami's commentary says that even perfection, says than even perfection, greater than even perfection, which means liberation. Siddhir Gyanat Muktir Va Iti Sri Bhagavan Nama Komadi Va Cha. And the Sri Bhagavan Nama Komadi glosses then perfection, which is knowledge, or else liberation. Siddhi can be taken to mean jnana, or mukti. Sri Kapila Devaha. This verse was spoken by Sri Kapila Deva. The instruction commentary. The instruction cited here about the superiority of devotional service was spoken by Lord Kapiladeva to his mother. The book Bhagavan Nama Komadi, which explains the meanings of various names of the Supreme Lord, was written sometime before the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by, I think it's Lakshmidhar. Okay. Any questions?
Yes.
So, yes.
Do we know anything about the author? Who was he? He was here to be good here.
Yeah, I just don't remember. Sorry. There is information about him, but we have the book. We have the Sanskrit text of the book. Yes.
So does it mean that one of the names of Krishna is Siddhi?
No. I think the word just comes up in the discussion. I don't think it's a name question. Because Siddhi is not a person. There's a demigoddess of Siddhi, but that's, I don't think that would be a name of Vishnu. Siddhi something, Siddhi Dayaka.
Like Mukti Dhanu, Krishna Mukti Dhanu, Siddhi.
Siddhi-da, yeah, that is that, yes. Okay. And that can be considered a name. Okay, anything else? All right, we have to open up another file. 86. 86 has some parts to it. Oh, only two paragraphs. Okay. Tadevam Sri Bhagavan Ev Akonda Tattvam Sadaka Visheshanam Tadvisha Yogyatva Abhavat Samanyakaro Dayatvena Tadasam Yak Spurtyureva Prameti Sakshad Eva Vaktitvabhyam. There's two verses here. Let's see who spoke of them. Also Kapila Dev. Okay, so it is that the personality of Godhead alone is the complete reality. And Brahman is its incomplete appearance, the incomplete appearance of the complete reality. Brahman is its incomplete appearance in a general form to certain aspirants because they lack such qualification. They're not devotees, so they just see the absolute truth as impersonal. This is stated explicitly in two verses spoken by Lord Kapiladev. Gana yogas chamarishto nayagunyo bhakti lakshanaha dvaryorapyeka evarto bhagavat chabda lakshanaha. Both the yoga of knowledge, which frees one from the modes of matter, and the yoga which consists of devotional service, have one and the same objective, who is known by the name of Bhagavan. So, Jnana Yoga also aims at Bhagavan, indirectly. Yatendriyai pritag dwarayar arto bahu gunashrayaha gunashrayaha eko nani yate tadva Bhagavan Shastra Vartmamihi. A single object with a number of different qualities is appreciated variously by different senses. Similarly, the personality of Godhead is one, but according to different scriptural descriptions, he appears differently. No, it's not the rod. That's not turning, it's turning over here. Okay, should I read that again? A single object with a number of different qualities is appreciated variously by different senses. Similarly, the personality of Godhead is one, but according to different scriptural descriptions, he appears differently.
That doesn't help.
Commentary. Impersonalists are not fit to realize the whole truth because they lack the devotional taste of pure aspirants like Kartava, Arjuna, Uddhava, and Dhruva, the ones whose statements were mentioned above. Kartava, we heard something about him, not spoken by him. Their vague realization, the impersonalists' vague realization, will never become distinct until they give up their ill feelings against the personality of Godhead. Simple envy underlies their insistence on the formlessness of the Supreme. Okay, I'm making a point here that the real reason why the impersonalists avoid the personality is because they're envious of them. Any comments? This is fairly simple. Yes?
The very first sentence of the translation, they said that so is that the personality of Godhead alone is in complete reality, and no one is in complete appearance, and they are hope to serve as aspirants because they lack such qualification. But qualification wasn't mentioned before.
What qualification?
You said such qualification, but
yeah.
what was the.
Well, I'll have to go back. I mean, that was from yesterday's discussion. Can we go back? I'll open up the previous file. Look at the bottom of it. Let's see.
At least it can be mentioned previously. Make sure that this translation, then you can, or we will have to explain which complication it is.
I'm looking right now. Well, okay. I mean, I'm just translating. It says Tadrisha Yoga 12, such qualification. So it is, that's not my idea, this Yuga Swami said, it is referring back to something here. Looks like at the beginning of 82 it shows up. Well, if we go back to the description of the gradual process of realization as exemplified by Kardama, Kardama gained various qualifications as he advanced. You know, you have to... he became attracted to the Supreme Person, that's the main qualification. But I think we'll find that... anyway, that goes back to 82. The qualification of being interested in the Lord as a person is basically the qualification of being attracted to Him. That would have to be, I can't add anything to the verse, to Jiva Goswami's sentence, but I should explain it in the commentary. Let me go back to the 85. Well, I try to say it there in the first sentence of the commentary. That's the qualification. They just lack the taste for devotion. Okay, that's it, basically. By first realizing Brahman and then Paramatma, Kardama, for example, got the taste for devotion. And that was his qualification to move up to Bhagavan realization.
In this commentary, you write that they lack the devotional taste of pure aspirants like Abdama, Arjuna, Nidhava, and Dhruva.
Yes.
Now, it can be said that Arjuna and Nidhava are aspirants, but they are also Nitya Siddhas. Although it can be said that Arjuna is an Ansha of Indra, and Nidhava is an Ansha of Upanchalavasu. But they are Nitya Siddhas. Someone may read this and think that they are not exactly the same category as Kapdama and Dhruvas.
Well, okay, but they do... You said Dhruva?
Dhruva and Kapdama are in a separate category.
Uddhava and Arjuna.
Arjuna and Vinupa.
Yeah. Okay, rather than... you can say that they, even though they weren't sadhakas, they pretended to be sadhakas also, but I'll change it. Pure devotees, okay? No. Where does it devotional taste? I'm going to have to leave it. See, we're talking about realizing the whole truth. Who can realize the whole truth? So we are talking about aspirants for realizing the whole truth. And you could argue that Arjuna and Uddhava, they didn't have to realize it, they already knew it. Okay, I'll make a note of it. I'm not sure how to handle it. I can't just change the word to devotees. Yes? Yes.
Whether you have to our qualifications to somehow drag Krishna's mercy or the other.
Our qualification is Krishna's mercy. That's all our qualification. It's only by his mercy that we become interested in him. Okay, but that hasn't been discussed here. That's true, but it's not been the topic of discussion, I think. That's discussed elsewhere.
What would be a devotional service in general? Because it looks like that it is just...
Well, devotional service is the manifestation of Krishna's mercy.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, you can think that, okay, I'm just trying to realize Brahma, then from Brahma to Brahma, then to go on by my own moment.
Yes. Anyway, I'm saying it's devotional taste. It's not any material qualification. Then we could, there's a whole scope for analyzing what is devotional taste, where does it come from, but that's not the discussion here. That will come in the Bhakti Sandarbha. Yes?
Bhagavatam verse is quoted here. It says that jnana and bhakti are used to the same goal. But we also say that Krishna cannot be, Bhagavan cannot be approached by anything, any other process other than bhakti.
The only way it can work is by jnana yoga leading to bhakti yoga. Jnana yoga, if it stops at that, doesn't reach Krishna. But jnana yoga can be a preparation for, it's originally meant, the Vedic process, it's given by the Vedas, jnana yoga, recommended in the Upanishads, because it can lead to bhakti. It doesn't necessarily lead, but it can. So indirectly, it becomes the means of achieving Krishna.
So
it's not going to work. What are you doing? Okay, like that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I think there is underlying understanding behind when you say that both jnana and bhakti is meant to, the objective is Bhagavan. That means.
Well, it's Krishna saying it. Well, okay.
Somebody can argue both are leading to the same goal. Like we have a ladder system.
See, it says they have one and the same objective. That means where they're aiming for. It's not talking about achieving it. It's talking about that's what they want to achieve. Well, that's Krishna's statement. That Jnana Yoga also is meant for, it's intended for, achieving me. That's Krishna's arrangement. That's Krishna's purpose.
That means jnana yoga without bhakti cannot achieve Krishna. That is for sure.
Oh yeah, but that is stated by Krishna and others in other places.
Okay.
That only pure devotional service actually achieves Krishna.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're talking about having Krishna as the ultimate aim. Those who practice Jnana Yoga, they may have something else in mind. But those who design the Jnana Yoga system, those who teach it, they have this in mind. Okay. I'm going to read a commentary on these two verses. Tikacha, the commentary of Sridhar Swami, says about these two verses spoken by Kapiladev. Anena cha jnana yogena bhagavan eva prapyaha. The first verse, okay, it doesn't say first, but I'm adding the word first to put it in context. The first of the two verses says that by this jnana yoga also, it is the personality of Godhead who is to be achieved. Doesn't say he is achieved, but that's what is the purpose to be achieved. Yata bhakti yogena ityaha. Just as by bhakti yoga, the same way as bhakti yoga is intended for achieving the Lord, so is jnana yoga. Confirmed by Sri Swami. Nair gunyo jnana yogascha. Anishto Bhakti Lakshanas, Triyogas, Trayor, Trayorap Yeka Evarta, Prayojana. Both Jnana Yoga, which is beyond the material modes, and the yoga characterized by devotion, which is dedicated to me, have a single purpose or aim. Jnana Yoga is beyond the material modes. It's a spiritual process. Karma Yoga, if it's performed with selfish motives, is still material. It's not really a transcendental process. But according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, Karma Yoga, if it's performed selflessly, is the beginning of spiritual practice. And proper Jnana Yoga, I said Karma Yoga, right? And Jnana Yoga, when it's properly practiced, is spiritual, but it's more or less usually impersonal. Okay, but the aim is the same. In the spiritual realm, everything aims at Krishna. Material world, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, or AKA. In the spiritual realm, all the goals are one. To realize and satisfy Krishna. That's the spiritual world. If you have someone or something not aimed at Krishna, it's not spiritual. Okay. Now, what is that single purpose or aim? Kosal. Bhagavad Shabda Lakshanam Gyapako Yasya. What is that aim? It's that which is defined, or rather designated, by the word Bhagavan. That's your goal. Taruktam Sri Gitasu. The same is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Te prapnuvanti mameva sarvabhuta hiterata. Krishna talking about the impersonalists. And he says, engaged in the welfare of all, they achieve me. Not that all impersonalists achieve Krishna, but if they do everything right, they achieve him. And that's, so that shows, in Krishna's own words, that Krishna is the goal of Jnana. Okay, but there's an objection, question raised. Nanu, Jnana Yogasya Atma Labha Phalam Shastrena Avagamyate Bhakti Yogasya Tu Bhajani Yeshvara Praptihi. But it's a question. We understand from scripture that the fruit of Jnana Yoga is attainment of the self, Atma Labha, while that of Bhakti Yoga is achievement of the Supreme Lord, Bhagavad Prapti, who's the Supreme Lord, who's the object of worship. How then can the two have the same, one and the same aim? There's a question. Kutas tayor ekartatvam. Arta can mean meaning, but arta can also mean goal. So how do the two processes have the same goal? Ityashankya drishtante upapadayati. This is all Sridhar Swami talking here, his commentary. This objection is anticipated and resolved by presenting an analogy. What analogy? Going back to the two verses, what's the analogy? Yatin riyaya pritam tvaya riyaya. As a single object can be seen differently when perceived by different senses. That's the analogy. Okay. You know, if you, anyway, you hear one thing, you see the same thing, you touch the same thing, you get different impressions, different ideas from the different senses. Now, the example, according to Sridhar Swami, Yata Bhagunam Rupa Rasadi Nam Gunanam Ashraya Shiradir Eka Evarto Marga Beda Pavittayar Indriyayar Nana Pratiyate Chakshusha Shukla Iti Rasanena Maruda Iti Sparshena Shita Itiyati. Okay, here's the analogy. Just as a single object like milk, there's our object, like milk, which shelters many qualities like visible form and taste, is perceived in various ways by senses functioning through different channels. The milk is perceived as white by the eye, as sweet by the tongue, as cool by the touch, and so on. So, similarly, tata bhagavan eka eva tat tad rupena avagamyate ityesha. So, similarly, the one personality of Godhead is perceived in various forms by different people. Okay, and that's the end of Sridhar Swami's comment. Atra bhagavan Eva angitvena nigadita. Here, the word term Bhagavan is used in the sense of the original from whom all expansions evolve. That could be the understanding of the meaning of the word, Bhagavan, possessor of all opulences. So all expansions are expanding from him. Atap. Sarvamsha pratyaya katvad bhakti yogascha manastani yogyeya Sri Kapila Devaha. And bhakti yoga corresponds to the mind in this analogy. Because the analogy is a material object being perceived by the mind through different senses. So bhakti yoga is like the mind. Bhakti yoga, I see. The different senses have partial perceptions that vary, but the mind puts it all together into a more complete picture. So different processes realize the Supreme Lord in different ways, partial ways, but Bhakti Yoga gives a complete realization.
But this analogy contradicts the statement.
What does it contradict?
This analogy is given to say that bhakti, jnana, you are achieving the self, bhakti, you are achieving the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
How we can say that you are getting...
Well, see, the senses supply information to the mind, and then the mind, using the sensory information, not ignoring it or contradicting it, puts together a complete picture. So your development of jnana, or your performative rituals, gives you some insight into the truth and inspires you to take to the process of devotion. Can. They're complementary, not contradictory. It's not that the mind says no, what the eye and what the tongue are telling me is wrong. It accepts that information, but then is able to produce a complete picture. So bhakti yoga takes all the realizations gained from these other spiritual processes and develops a complete picture.
So that means the statement should be through bhakti, or can I say Krishna, and jnana, with the help of bhakti, can we help on touching.
Yeah, that's what it really is, what is really happening. The other processes can only just help. Bhakti is the real sadhana.
Yeah,
but that will be, well, I mean, you have to ask Krishna why he said it. I mean, because he explained himself elsewhere that bhakti is the real sadhana and the only real sadhana for achieving me. He says it so many places, in the 11th canto and other places. So you have to take it in context with the other things he says. I mean, he's not saying that jnana yoga is just as good as bhakti yoga, you can take one or the other. But he's just making the point that jnana yoga also aims at me. Yeah. Taking it out of context, the Mayavadis do.
Yeah,
they go to town on the 11th canto. In the 11th canto, they take the Uddhava Gita and read, complete Mayavadi philosophy out of it. Because they take things out of context.
Yeah.
Yes, I will.
This is probably the one that was covered before. At the end, very end of your commentary, you write that the verse in question was written by Kabir Devi.
Was spoken by him, yes.
Spoken by Kabir Devi. Because you translate, because in the it was written by them in the end, but I think from an English reader's perspective, you should put that somewhere else in the commentary, where the verse actually is. You know, Kapila said,
One reason why I don't do that is that Jiva Goswami, he has a formula that he always says at the end. He leaves it like a, you know, like a mystery for the end. If I give it away before that, then you lose some of the dramatic effect. But I do very often, you know, tell you who's speaking before we get to the end of the discussion. And we don't say that here? Yeah, okay. Does it make a difference to know that Kapila is speaking here? I'll make a note of it.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if it's very important to know right here that these two verses were spoken by Kapila Dev. It's obvious that the Supreme Lord is speaking. No, I'm sorry, it isn't. No, it doesn't say he. Yes, I'm sorry.
If you write the verse of the discussion, then at that point, right in parentheses, exactly the short number, so it's really clear. In parentheses.
I see. I do that when there's any confusion. When more than one verse has been discussed in the Anuchet, and the original verse is all the way in the back, then I say verse number. But I'd rather not clutter it up if it's not necessary. Like here, the Anuchet is only two paragraphs, and there's no other verse quoted. So it's the only verse in the Anuchet anyway. Pair of verses, but there's no other verses there. Yes?
Maybe just enough for us to know that it's a couple of instructions, because we know that in Srimad Bhagavatam there are a few chapters of instructions to his mother. No other discussions at all.
Yeah. Well, all you have to do is read the next paragraph. At the end of 86.2, this verse was spoken by Sri Kapila Dev. Okay. I can't say it before I do the translation to the first part. I can say it in the commentary. But you're going to find out in the next paragraph anyway. Anyway, when it's important to know, I do say that, I do give it away, but I think here we don't have to. Also, you got a footnote. You look at the footnote, it says 332. Oh, that's Kapila Dev. Maybe you know that. And it's not, I don't think it's so essential to the discussion. You can follow the discussion without knowing it's Kapila Dev talking. All right, so. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, commentary. Jnana Yoga is the authorized method of approaching the ultimate truth by understanding. Aimless speculation does not count as Jnana Yoga, which strictly follows the revelations of the Upanishads and other Vedic scriptures. Because the proper target of the discipline of Jnana Yoga is Brahman, the real identity of Brahman, namely the personality of Godhead, is its real aim. Okay, that's the argument. Obviously, the aim of Jnana Yoga is Brahman. If we take it as real Brahman, Jnana Yoga, the kind that follows the Upanishads are teaching about Brahman. Well, we argue, or here I'm arguing, that Brahman is the personality of Godhead. Just his alter ego. So, therefore, the aim of Jnana Yoga is properly the personality of Godhead. The practice of devotional service enables a seeker of the truth to obtain the whole picture of Brahman. Thus, Bhakti Yoga is compared to the mind, which puts together coherent images from the different sensations collected by each of the senses.
So, the senses are compared to the Jnana Yoga?
Well, Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga and any other process you come up with. Yeah. Yes.
I think I remember one verse which was quoted in the previous chapter, Bhakti Siddhi and Gayasi.
That's Kapiladeva.
Yeah, but he read the whole verse, Devanam Bhutalinga. The senses are symbolic representations of the demigods. For them, natural inclination is to walk under the direction of the Vedic conjunctions. But the senses are representative of the demigods, so the mind is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. When the service spirit is engaged in devotional service to the Personality of Godhead without any motive, that is far better even than salvation. Also, the same analogy of mind.
But it's applied differently. Here you got the senses are like the living entities, and the mind is like God who is worshipped by them or served by them. Yeah. Same elements, but it makes a different analogy. Okay. Yes, sir.
In 11th canto or some other places also, Krishna is speaking that my yoga siddhe.
By yoga.
By yoga, karma, jnana. Specifically, Krishna says these processes cannot achieve me. So how we resolve it with these, when Krishna speaks like this, and here also we find that yoga.
Well, therefore, Jiva Goswami says that jnana and karma are never the causes of bhakti. They may help you understand what the absolute truth is. They may karma yoga purifies you, your conditioned nature. Jnana yoga gives you spiritual insight. But Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Bhakti Goswami Sindhu refused to accept them as causes of bhakti. But still, we have to understand Krishna is saying that the purpose of them is bhakti. Living entities who don't have the adhikar to perform bhakti, who are not ready for devotional service, for them, these other processes are there. To remove the obstacles that prevent them from entering into bhakti yoga.
So, like if they have to...
They're like prerequisites, preliminary, not prerequisite, because a prerequisite has to be performed. But they're preliminaries. Just like Ayurvedic doctor, I'll introduce another example. Ayurvedic doctor does pancha karma on a patient because his body is too polluted. It's not ready for rasayana treatment, which is more subtle. So first he has to clean out the garbage from the body with pancha karma. Now the pancha karma doesn't make you well, but it makes it possible for you to get good results from rasayana. Without it, you're wasting your money and energy to take the rasayana medicine without first cleaning the garbage out of your body. So those who are not ready, they should do karma and jnana to get them ready for bhakti. But in Kali Yuga, the situation is mixed up. It's like there's no getting ready. Now we're about to jump off a cliff. We better do the right thing right now, else we're going to jump off the cliff. We're going to fall. We're going to become animals. So before we become animals, very soon we better engage directly in devotional, in pure devotional service. But that's the situation in the current age. In previous ages, we had more time, and we could gradually prepare ourselves.
So, if you want to make a statement that in one place Krishna is saying that through karma and jnana one cannot achieve me, and here it says karma and jnana is meant to achieve Krishna. What is that element there? It says one cannot
meant to to achieve Krishna means that the purpose they exist is the achievement of Krishna. They don't achieve Krishna, but they exist to make it possible for you to do the right thing to achieve Krishna, namely devotional service. They're meant to serve devotional service by making those who are disqualified to remove their disqualification so they can engage in devotional service. Yeah. Yes? Just like, okay, can I give another example? Do you want to study, you know, Russian literature? Well, you want to study, you know, the original books. If you don't know the language, you're going to have to take an elementary language course first, Russian 101. So the Russian 101 won't teach you, you know, everything about Russian literature. It won't teach you anything about it. But you have to take it before you can study Russian literature in the original.
Yes. The person cannot be attained by any kind of yogi unless he engages in devotional service to the personality of Godhead. But that is the only option.
So it says a clause, unless he engages in devotional service. They can lead to bhakti if after doing these other things they start performing bhakti. They can, then they can indirectly lead to the Supreme Lord. But only by being preparations for bhakti. Okay, we have a fairly short underchain. We'll try to cover it in the next 8 minutes. 87. Ata eva tat amsha tvainaiva brahma shruyate. Therefore we hear that Brahman is just a partial expansion of the personality of Godhead. Well, okay, we are told that Brahman is the personality of Godhead, not, you know, one half of him or one quarter of him. But Jiva Goswami is going to explain to him how it is that we can say that Brahman is an amsha, a part, a partial expansion of Bhagavan. Not that he's, you know, less than complete. Not that he's less than complete in quantity, but there's something missing in quality. Okay, anyway, there's a verse. Spoken by Krishna, I think in the eighth canto, let me see. Sixth canto, chapter 16, I don't know. Okay, Lord Vishnu is speaking to Chitraketu. Or was Lord Aniruddha he worshipped? Okay, he met Vishnu first, and then he went and worshipped. Huh? Samkarsana? Okay, Lord Samkarsana. Speaking, he says, Aham vai sarva bhutani bhutatma bhuta bhavanaham shabda brahma param brahma mamo bheshashvati tanu. He says, I am indeed all beings and the soul and sustainer of all beings. The supreme sound of the Vedas and the supreme absolute truth of both eternal bodies of mine. Okay, so Shabda Brahma and Para Brahman, Krishna's or Lord Sankarsana is saying these are two of my bodies. Now, Sri Goswami explains this. But I think we don't have time to cover it properly. I think we'll start this tomorrow. Anybody have a question or two? Any questions? I don't want to rush this. This is a little dense. We should spend more than 5 minutes on it. Okay, we'll just stop for now. Thank you. Om Lurie Sushila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.